I want to say a special thanks again to Felix Onyedike Uzomah, who joined us in studio. Be sure to check out the 3 o'clock hour on the podcast. Certainly happy to have him join us on the show. Coming up in about 15 minutes, you know what? We're going to take a trip down memory lane with the Kansas City Chiefs, but let's talk about the Kansas City Royals. So, I have been seeing some projections on who certain baseball writers think are going to make the All-Star game. Now, there have been two Royals players that have been locked into the All-Star game. Bobby Witt Jr. to start at shortstop and Chris Bubich. Certainly can't argue either one of those individuals. Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be at the All-Star game. Maybe he doesn't win the fan vote, then he is simply going to be voted in by the players if that's the case. So, Bobby Witt Jr., we don't have to talk about him. He will be in the All-Star game this year. Chris Bubich certainly has earned it. He might actually start the All-Star game. He certainly is in the conversation. Now, I'm guessing that Tarik Skubal will probably start if he is available, but Chris Bubich is definitely in the conversation to start the All-Star game if the All-Star game happened today. So, those two individuals. Now, Rob, this is what I find very interesting. Two different stories I read. One was in The Athletic. The one was on the front page of ESPN. The one that was on The Athletic had Carlos Estevez as another Royals representative, which makes sense. He's been on this show before. If you come on this show, positive things happen. Felix Onyedike Uzomah just signed himself up for a 9-sack season because he came on this show. That's the kind of power that we yield here on The Drive. The other story that I read, it had Mikel Garcia as a Royals representative this year. So we saw two different independent. One was on The Athletic. One was on ESPN's front page. Both had the Royals at 3 All-Stars. Rob, I'll ask you the question. I'll set the over-under at 2.5. Do you think the Royals get over or under 2.5? Because you and I could both see a scenario in which both of those guys don't make the All-Star game. There's early projections. On the ESPN, Mikel Garcia was actually this writer's last person that he voted into the All-Star game. Estevez has had a very good season, but you could certainly see Carlos Estevez not making the All-Star team. I'll set the over-under at 2.5. What you got?
I'm gonna take the over. So I'm going to take the over pretty confidently here. I would have thought differently if you set the number at 3.5, because I think Bubich is a lock, and I think Bobby Witt's a lock. I feel strongly about both of those. I also think Carlos Estevez is in the lock category. I know fans have had, you know, a weird frustration with him because he does let on a level of base runners, but his ERA is, like, last check in the 2s, and he's second in the American League in saves. Now, you're right. Me, you, the text line, we watch these games. It doesn't feel like Wade Davis in 2015. It doesn't feel like Greg Holland in 2014. It doesn't feel like, hey, they just have no hope. They should just go take the bats out of the dugout and play. It doesn't feel that way. But the stats are what the players and managers look at to make reserve picks. Whoever the manager is this year, I believe it's Aaron Boone, because the Yankees are in the All-Star game. When he's picking his relievers for the All-Star game, he's not going to say, oh, you know, Carlos Estevez is second in the league in saves, but, you know, when I watch his games, it doesn't feel dominant. That's not how they pick these things. So I think those three are all in the lock category, which the conversation to me starts with 3.5. Basically, do you or don't you have Mikel Garcia in the All-Star game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very difficult. And I understand that some of my, like, knowledge of all the teams in Major League Baseball, I guess, and this is just the American League, is a little bit limited. Because, like, the Carlos Estevez, the Mikel Garcia, do you know that on every team? So I can admit that coming up on the front end. I find it kind of hard to believe that a team that is hovering around 500 gets 4 guys into the All-Star game, especially when every team has to have somebody. The White Sox have to have a representative. The Rockies in the National League have to have a representative. So those guys just gobble up spots where maybe Mikel Garcia would get in, but you have to make room for this player, etc. It is crazy that, Rob, there are 14 players in Major League Baseball that are currently hitting over 300, and Mikel Garcia is one of those players. A, it's surprising that there are so few guys that are hitting 300. Like, in the American League, there are only 11 guys that currently have an average over 300, and there's not that many guys in the National League. So that just feels very, very important. Mikel Garcia should be one of the stories that baseball wants to tell. We're talking about a 25-year-old that had a down year, but has turned things around this year and is having a career year for him. He's hitting 312. He has 7 home runs so far. So he has as many home runs that he had all of last year. Mikel Garcia only had 11 home runs coming into this season as in his career. He has 7 so far this year. 31 RBIs, a guy that has 13 stolen bases. We're talking about a guy who is on pace to hit 15 home runs this year with 60, 65 RBIs. Also could steal 30 bases and hit 300. That guy historically usually makes the All-Star team. Now, does he have the name cachet recognition to make it? We'll obviously see if that happens. I just find it hard to believe that they're going to get 4 guys in, but I would take the over on 2.5. We know that they got 2 guys that are for sure locks. Witt Jr. and Chris Bubich are locks, and they deserve to get one more of their other guys in. So whether it's Garcia, maybe he ends up being an alternate for somebody, an injury happens, he gets a chance to go, and probably one guy out of their bullpen probably gets the invite to go out there.
Yeah, the Garcia one is really fascinating to me. And the thing about Garcia to me, and the text line brings this up, that Alex Bregman got hurt, so that changes the calculus a little bit for the Red Sox. But, like, and maybe it's because the All-Star game has lost a lot of its luster. Like, I remember when we were kids, the All-Star game was a big deal. Now it doesn't feel like it has that same oomph. Maybe because they wear those terrible, goofy jerseys. I don't know. But, like,
I think it's just we just know less and less baseball players.
That's true.
Like, I think the All-Star game is actually the same. If we go back and we look at the 2000, let's go 20 years ago, 25 years ago, if you and I look at the 2000 rosters, we could probably, oh, I remember him. We could look at last year's roster. I don't know any of those individuals. That's where I think the lore is. We don't know baseball players in 2025 like we did in 2005.
That's a great point. My point was this, like, how many third basemen does an All-Star roster carry? Like, Jose Ramirez from Cleveland is making the All-Star game. That is a foregone. He's probably going to be the starter. Then, like, how many do you carry after that? Paredes for the Astros is probably going to make the All-Star game. Like, do you carry a third? Like, and that's where it feels like the, hey, how do you kind of maneuver and handle a roster in the All-Star game really starts to play a factor. But I bet you if we looked up 25 years ago, we know more guys in 25 years ago All-Star game than we know in last year's All-Star game by a wide margin. I think the All-Star game lost its luster because baseball stopped marketing itself well. And people like Mikel Garcia, you were never going to the ballpark to see that guy, but you were aware that he was playing on the Orioles or whoever. That doesn't exist anymore in baseball.
Do you want the American League roster or you want the National League roster?
Let's do American Leagues.
The American League roster back in 2000, so 25 years ago. Pudge Rodriguez, Jason Giambi, Roberto Alomar, Cal Ripken Jr., Alex Rodriguez, Jermaine Dye actually started.
Oh, wow.
He started in the left field for the American League All-Star team. Manny Ramirez and Bernie Williams. That was the starters.
That's what,
for the
6 Hall of Famers right off the, like, that.
It's a really good team. It's a really good team.
And Giambi, you could argue, is Hall of Famer.
That's not even counting how good the National League team is. I'll give you the National League team. Mike Piazza, Mark McGwire, Jeff Kent, Chipper Jones, Barry Larkin, Barry Bonds, Ken Griffey Jr., Sammy Sosa. That was the National League starting team. Yeah, we just don't know baseball players like that. Like, I can give you the National League starters from last year. You don't know who they are. At catcher in 2000, it was Mike Piazza. It was William Contreras for the National League last season. Now, Adley Rutschman was the American League catcher last year. Like, yeah, we can go through these rosters. You just don't know some of these guys before. We don't even got to get, like, we start going to the reserves. You're really about to be like, I'm not aware. I don't know. So I just think, I don't think the All-Star game is any different than it was when you and I were kids. We just know less baseball players now than we did when we were a kid. And I think that's what's made it potentially lose its luster. Someone said, what about the home field advantage? That was the worst idea they have ever had. It didn't matter that it ended in a tie. I don't know why we wanted to try to make the All-Star game more important. Like, we overreacted to a tie in an exhibition. So now it needs to determine who gets home field in the World Series. A very, very awful idea. Whoever had that idea. Coming up on the other side, let's take a nostalgic trip down memory lane with the Chiefs. I'll explain. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, I got distracted for a little bit by the text line, but this is actually a sports topic. So we were talking about the All-Star game, and Rob, you made the point that the All-Star game isn't what it was when we were coming up. Some people on the text line agree with you. CDOT, they don't play for home field advantage anymore. There's no juice in the game. My question would be, why in the world does the All-Star game need to have juice? It's watching the best baseball players in the world. I didn't really need anything else to go with it. Someone else also makes the point, it hurts that it doesn't impact the playoffs. Someone else said it forced the players to try. Last year's All-Star game was 5-3. I could see if it was 19-17 and you were watching batting practice. It was a 5-3 baseball game. That seems like a normal competitive baseball game. I don't think that's the issue. This is the issue that it seems like a very obvious point, but sometimes I think we blame baseball or other things when it's really an us thing. Football is more popular now than it's ever been before. Rob, I looked this up during the commercial break. It is hard for you and I to even imagine this in our life. Did you know that 25 years ago, football was not the most popular things on television? Where do you think Monday Night Football lasted or ranked on this list? Monday Night Football that came on this is pre-ESPN. So you guys are like, oh, well, it's on cable. No, Monday Night Football on ESPN 25 years ago. So this is the top television show from the 99 to 2000 year. Monday Night Football is not in the top five. This was the top five 25 years ago. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday? They were getting 18 shares for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire three times a week. ER, Friends, Frasier, Monday Night Football. So 25 years ago, football was obviously popular. I'm not making it sound like it wasn't popular. It wasn't by far and away the most popular thing on television. That's not the case anymore. It is by far and away the number one most popular thing. So I do think some of what has changed with baseball, A, our attention spans are very different. The moment that they started putting the internet and all of the things on our cell phone, baseball was cooked. We like things to happen really quickly. Information comes really quickly on our phones. I'm on TikTok. Rob, you use TikTok. You're constantly being hit with things. That's just not really what baseball is. Baseball doesn't appeal to us in the way that we consume things now. And football's more popular now than ever before. Football takes up way more of our lifetime and space. It takes up more of the conversation. So if you're fully inundated with this one thing, I don't know if people have the interest to then be all into the NBA, all into baseball, all into college basketball the way that they were before. Like, Rob, I'm sitting here looking at it, like, football wasn't the number one show on television until kind of recently. Like, up until Sunday Night Football really, really started to hit. It was always around the top five. Yeah, Monday Night Football, 7-1 year, it's 8-1 year, it's 9-1 year. And then, as, you know, we started watching more things live, and more people started having access to watch things later on television, that's when you really start to see football explode. Football is the only show you have to watch live. You don't have to watch any other show live. It's great to watch the shows live, but you don't have to watch Game of Thrones when it happens. You don't have to watch The Last of Us when it happens. They put The Bear just on FX on Hulu. Here, watch it. Football is the only show you are required to watch when it actually happens. So as football has gotten more and more popular, I think we've also seen our interest in everything else is just, it's decreased. So I don't think baseball as a whole is that much different than it was when we were kids. We just like other things more now than we did when we were kids.
I agree with you, but I think, and we can point to the things, football has, in that time since they became the most popular television show, always trying to evolve and stay atop the cutting edge. Like, it's commonplace now, but there was a while in the NFL where it was on television. The idea of, like, that, you know, guy with a camera in the end zone getting close to people celebrating wasn't a thing. The team celebrations in front of the camera wasn't a thing. The graphics were just ho-hum. The NFL took that TV world and they were always been out of the forefront of it ever since they became part of it. Baseball has not at least tried that at all. Like, what's the big television baseball innovation you've seen the last 25 years? Does it exist?
Yeah, you're right. I guess, and I'm not here to take away from football, obviously, how popular football is. I just think that football has just so many inherent advantages with how we consume things. Like, I just went to a random year. I went to 2002, 2003. Monday Night Football was the 10th most popular show on television that year. Listen to this. CSI. Can you imagine more people watching CSI in 2025 than watching Monday Night Football? It'd be crazy to think that that happens. Friends, Joe Millionaire, ER. This is during the American Idol crave. So Tuesday and Wednesday, American Idol. Two versions of Survivor. Everybody Loves Raymond. Regular Law and Order, then Monday Night Football. Like, some of how football got popular, again, is this is the only show that you need to watch when it happens. And I think as they started to realize that, they really started to increase the production where it makes it feel like a TV show you gotta watch. They do a really good job, I think, of building it up throughout the course of the week. Hey, our marquee television show is, we don't think about it as a TV show. The marquee television show is these two teams that are playing each other. Even though it does not matter who wins the week four game most of the time. I mean, it'd be great if your team won in week four, but you can still win the Super Bowl. It doesn't affect if you make or miss the playoffs. It is not that big of a deal if your team wins or loses. Man, they make it feel like it's a big deal if your team wins or loses. You gotta watch it. You gotta see how the television show ends. I just think the television, or excuse me, football perfectly fits into how we watch TV today, where there's nothing else that fits perfectly into how we watch TV today. Nothing else that we watch fits in perfectly to it. And I think that's a major reason of how football has expanded. Also, gambling, fantasy football, there's a lot of other things. But just the way that it's packaged, the way that it's presented, how you have to watch sports, it just gives it such an advantage over everything else.
So, to ask you the billion-dollar question, which is probably impossible to answer, but I'm going to ask anyway. Is there anything baseball or basketball, for that matter? Because I also think basketball has the inverse problem of baseball. Baseball doesn't have a lot of, like, the thing that football does best.
Play less games is the answer to your question. Play less games.
At college level, too, like, we got to trim down games. It's that simple. There's got to be a way to enhance television product without affecting, you know, the competitive balance, which would change with play less games. Like, you know, someone on the text line said the strike zone was a big upgrade to television product. There's got to be more baseball can do as a television show to make it more interesting as a television show.
Play less games. It's the only way to do it. Play less games. Think about this, Rob. Over the course of the season, there's 272 football games. How many of those games do you think you watch a part of? I'm not arguing from start to finish. I don't think you watch all 272 games from beginning to end. What percentage of football games do you think you watch some part of it?
That include, like, I'm on social media and see a clip?
No, I'm saying is, like,
I sat in front of the television. With Red Zone, the number is going to be pretty high. I'm betting I'm in the 220 to 250 range.
And I would say it's relatively easy to keep up with the NFL, right?
It wasn't hard to get to that number. Yeah, I agree.
How many NBA regular season games do you think there are as a whole? I'll even look up basketball too, or baseball too. How many games do you think are in an NBA regular season?
I'm just doing the math. 30 times 82. So what? How many NBA games are to answer your question before you give me the number, I cannot remember the last time I sat down and watched a full regular season NBA game start to finish.
It doesn't matter if you watch the whole game or not. Honestly.
Yeah, that's true. I can't remember the last time whatever the number is, I'm probably under 25% of games.
I'm trying to find the number here. I couldn't find it quick enough. Oh, you ready? All right. In an NBA season, there are 1,230 games. How many baseball games do you think there are in a whole season?
Oh, that's going to be an enormous number. Each team plays 162.
2,430.
Yeah.
So a major reason why the NFL is so popular is there's always a sense of urgency. Always a sense of urgency. And it's not a sense of urgency for the individual team. It's a sense of urgency for you. You don't have that many of them. It does not matter if you watch the Royals tomorrow. I mean, it just doesn't matter. I mean, it'd be great if you watched the Royals tomorrow. It'd be even better if you listen on 96.5 The Fan. But if you miss the Royals game, it's not the end of the world because they have another game tomorrow and then another game after that. So, yeah, you can go on vacation for 7 days. I mean, you come back. We'll update you on what happened. Rob, how many times do you not watch the NBA game but also know what's going on? You can't watch football like that. You can't miss. You can't be watching the Bear and then miss episodes 1 through 4 and pick up on episode 5 and know what's going on. No, that's not how it works. You can pick up that in baseball. You can pick up that in the NBA. You can't watch football like that. You can't stop watching football from weeks 2 and then pick it up in week 9 and know what's going on in the league. You can't. It's impossible. But you missed a whole lot of stuff along the way. You missed who's hurt. You missed who's healthy. You missed this guy that you never heard of before that now leads the NFL in rushing. So, yeah, the only way to get the urgency back in baseball or basketball is to reduce the number of games.
I would say this, though, and maybe we're saying the same thing differently. I think at the NFL, you could miss those things, but it's not the actual game day. It's the Monday through Thursday that every television company, whether it be NFL Network, ESPN, ESPN2, social media, they act like these updates on those things are, you know, tectonic move. Like, can you believe this happened? Like, oh my goodness. Oh, how are the Chiefs going to handle Isaiah Pacheco broke his leg after week two? You could keep up with that without watching the games. Oh, he's hurt. He's not playing this week. But they make it feel like if you aren't up to total date and you aren't in the know, you're out. And that's what the NFL does best, is they make it feel like you can't miss episodes 2 through 4 because you watch episode 1 and 5. Baseball doesn't sell you with that urgency. And to your point,
it can't, though. But
that's fair.
But I mean, if you got 2,000 games and your team plays 162 times, it is impossible to sell you that Wednesday's Royals game is important. It is impossible to sell you that it's important. It's not important. The Royals could win, lose. It doesn't matter. I mean, eventually the games start to matter, and as a whole, cumulatively, of course. But how can baseball tell you that Thursday against the Yankees is so important? They need this game. You know they don't need that game. I mean, it'd be great. You go out there, get yourself a hot dog, get yourself a beer. They don't need to win the game, though. Where in the NFL, I mean, there are a handful of games. Hey, it will be really bad for your team if they lose this game. It'll be really bad if they lose. When the Chiefs play the Bills coming up, what, week 8, week 9 this season? Hey, if you want to host the AFC Championship game, you guys should probably win this game. It'd be really important for you if you win this game. I just don't think you can create that urgency in Major League Baseball or the NBA with the amount of games that they play. The Chiefs play the Bills one time in the regular season. The Lakers will play the Mavericks 4 times in the regular season. You just can't sell me that this one game is really important. That's why I just think football just has so many inherent advantages over other sports in the way that it's packaged as a television product. Let's move on from this. I saw something very interesting. I saw that Chris Conley retired. Now, you guys might be thinking, who is that? Well, he was a wide receiver. He came out of Georgia. I think he was a second-round pick to the Chiefs a few years back, and I was thinking about that because Chris Conley is a part of the play that made me realize that Patrick Mahomes was special. You guys remember, this was the third game of Patrick Mahomes, I guess, starting career. He started the game against the Denver Broncos. He played really well against the Chargers. He was phenomenal in game 2 against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were coming home against the San Francisco 49ers. And honestly, I know he has made better plays since then, no question. This is still my favorite Patrick Mahomes play against the San Francisco 49ers.
Chiefs lead 14-7. Mahomes in the pocket, peeling away, being rushed. Now peels back to his right, trying to keep the play alive. Pump faking, fires it late. It's caught in the back of the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City. Chris Conley with the catch. But Patrick Mahomes with Mahomes magic. Starting left, peeling right. 3 drives, 3 touchdowns for the Chiefs.
I'll never forget that moment. Like, it's one of those, just, I remember exactly where I was. I remember who was there watching it with me. I remember what I thought. I remember how I felt. And I looked at my friend and I said, that was Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. Just everything about it. Keeping his balance, staying up, looking downfield, the throw in the back of the end zone, an amazing play. Maybe you had that moment earlier in Mahomes' career, and kudos to you. I can only tell you my own experience. And when I realized, hey, he different, it was that moment right there. That touchdown pass to Chris Conley at home against the San Francisco 49ers was when I realized that the Chiefs had a superstar at quarterback and he had a chance to be one of the best players that we had ever seen. There aren't too many human beings that can make that play. Rob, have you watched the Favre documentary yet?
I haven't. I need to.
I mean, you don't need to watch it. You know the story already. But just like, it was some of the things that we saw Favre do in 94 and 95. It was all of the Favre with none of the mistakes. Like, Favre would give you the 300 yards and the 3 touchdowns. He would also throw 2 interceptions. Mahomes would throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns and not throw an interception. It was like all of these incredible characteristics that made Brett Favre one of the greatest quarterbacks you've ever seen, with none of the mistakes and none of the flaws as a player. And that is when it kind of hit me that the Chiefs had something special. So I wanted to go back in time and take this nostalgic journey. So I want to tell you guys my favorite Patrick Mahomes throws. That's my number one favorite throw, is the throw to Chris Conley. But I want to show you guys my favorite Patrick Mahomes throws. This is, I would say, my one is the Chris Conley. This might be my 1B, the left-handed throw against the Broncos on Monday Night Football.
This crowd crazy, making it tough on Patrick Mahomes. Broncos show blitz, a sellout blitz. Mahomes trying to keep it a drive. He's looking to the left side. He throws it left-handed to Tyreek Hill, and Hill makes the catch, and he's out of bounds at the 49-yard line of Denver. A first down, third and five. Batman's left-handed. He throws it for six with his left hand.
You know how we talk about with baseball players, like you need to see them fail? Like you want to see how they handle failure? It was important to me at that stage in Mahomes' career, I would say in a Justin Herbert kind of way. Justin Herbert is really good when everything is going well. When everything is going well, but that's not real life, and that's certainly not how playing quarterback is. Something is usually going to go wrong. You get a holding call on third down that erases a first down. You get an injury that happens. A player drops a pass. It is never going to be perfect as a quarterback. The Chiefs offense was really struggling that game against the Broncos. That was a game that we have seen the Chiefs lose countless number of times in our life. Just, you go on the road, you just don't have it. This is a divisional opponent. It's a Monday Night Football game. It's tough to win there. The Chiefs lose that game and you don't really bat an eyelash about it. It just happens with a young quarterback. That is when it started to me of, hey, this guy's not going to let them lose. I'll do whatever we need to do to figure out a way to win. This was the foundation of it for me. And it is something that we've seen ever since then. We could give you 10, 15 examples of Chiefs back up against the wall, most other teams, most other quarterbacks losing this scenario. And Patrick Mahomes is just like, no, we're not losing today. Like, whatever I got to do, I'm going to do my part. But we are not losing today because of me. And the left-handed throw was my first moment of that. Chiefs were not playing well. I think Sammy Watkins was hurt that game, so the offense just wasn't firing on all cylinders. And he makes that left-handed throw. They go down the field. They win against the Broncos. That is on my list of my favorite Patrick Mahomes throws. I have to put this one on the list. I think we all understand, but when you say it out loud, the Chiefs were down 20-10 with less than 10 minutes to go in the Super Bowl and won by double digits. They won by double digits, and it wasn't like they got a fumble return for a touchdown or a pick six. Like, no, they got stops, and then they scored with their offense and won by double digits in essentially 8 minutes in the Super Bowl. It's third and, what, 21? You lose this game. You lose this game 95 times out of 100. The five times Patrick Mahomes happens.
Third and 15 for the Chiefs from their own 35. And San Francisco leading by 10. 7:13 to go in the game. Seven guys drop back into his deep zone here for the 49ers. Four-man rush, but those four are enough. Here they come. Mahomes stepping up. He's throwing long downfield for Tyreek Hill. Got it at the 20-yard line. And then spun down there, the first giant chunk of the game on third down and 15. And Mahomes guns it for 44 yards down to the San Francisco 21-yard line.
Patrick Mahomes actually played pretty poorly in that Super Bowl up until that point. He did not play well in that first Super Bowl at all. And sometimes, you know, we love a cross-sport comparison on this show. Sometimes you're going to shoot 7-25 from the field. You better be able to help the team in some other ways. You better be able to defend. You better be able to rebound. You better be able to get a couple steals. You got to figure out other ways. And in a game in which Patrick Mahomes did not play well, in a game in which some of you don't think he should have won Super Bowl MVP, I don't even think he was their second best player in that game. We don't talk about it nearly enough. Chris Jones was incredible in both of the Super Bowls against San Francisco, especially that first one. He was phenomenal. And Pat just makes two big throws. the third down conversion to Tyreek Hill, and also the throw on the sideline to Sammy Watkins. That's a throw that we don't talk about nearly enough. Two big-time throws. And it goes to something we do talk about all the time. I don't care how well your team runs the football. I don't care how good your defense is. Eventually, in the playoffs, you are going to need your quarterback to make one or two big plays, whether it's with their arm, whether it's with their legs. Your quarterback is going to have to make a play to help you win because that's the way that football is structured. And we've seen it countless number of times. There's not a player in the league you rather have make those plays than the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs. The last play I'm going to play for you guys, because I was having this nostalgic moment with Chris Conley retiring, this might honestly be my favorite Patrick Mahomes play. And the legend of it grew when we got the audio on the television show Quarterback. That little scramble around touchdown pass he had against Tampa Bay is incredible.
Chiefs came into this game seventh in red zone offense. They have an offset eye at the two. They fake the trap. Now Mahomes scrambling to his right, holding it, gets off the hit, now lunging forward, and now fires it late, caught at the back of the end zone. Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Mahomes with the touchdown pass. His second touchdown pass of this game, the 161st of his career. That is the most touchdown passes by any NFL quarterback in history in their first 67 games. A two-yard touchdown pass, Mahomes, magic!
Yo, Mahomes looked at that man and said, I'm like that. It's a wild thing to say in the middle of a football game. I don't even know how you respond if you're the defense other than, no, you're right. He does all this moving around, scrambling. He just flings the ball in the back of the end zone. He didn't even, like, scream it. He didn't yell it calmly. I'm like that. I just, you know, you got it. You are a different human being. So those are my four favorite Mahomes throws. The Chris Conley play in his home opener as a starting quarterback. Wasp in the first Super Bowl win against San Francisco. The left-handed throw against the Denver Broncos on Monday Night Football. And the Clyde Edwards-Helaire little runaround scamper, he flings the ball in the back of the end zone. Just, I don't think we talk enough about how arrogant Mahomes is. And I just think this is just a characteristic that just all really, really great people have. It's like that Steph Curry, like, Steph, if you're going to take a three from half court and then turn around, just, I mean, you play the game with a different level of arrogance. Man, when he's flowing like that, and oh, man, it's just so fun to watch. So those are my four favorite Patrick Mahomes throws. I was happy to share that with you guys. Coming up on the other side, it's The Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Hersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. We've been having a lot of fun today. If you missed it, check out the podcast page. We had Felix Onyedike Uzomah join us in studio. A really fun hour. Would highly encourage you guys to check it out. We have a little bit of breaking news in the National Football League. One of the better corners over the last 5 years is now available. Green Bay has released Jaire Alexander.
Sources say they have informed Pro Bowl cornerback Jaire Alexander of his release. That is expected to take place today. So after an offseason of wondering and discussions and some trade talks, the Packers are in fact moving on from Jaire Alexander. Remember, this has been one that has been up and down, back and forth for the last several months, actually the last several years. Alexander, a Pro Bowler, one of the more talented cornerbacks in the NFL, has battled some injury issues over the last couple years, last year, particularly frustrating one. This offseason, the two sides agreed to explore a potential trade. That trade did not happen before the draft. So at that point, they discussed a potential pay cut, a restructured contract. Could not agree to terms on that either. In the end, the Green Bay Packers opt for a clean break. They are moving on, and now one of the more talented corners in the NFL expected to be available today.
I don't think that he is going to be in Kansas City. I think the Chiefs are actually pretty set at corner. I certainly don't think that they're going to spend the money to go get Jaire Alexander. This, to me, feels like a two-year, $26 million deal, and we end up looking at this as an overpay. Is that how you see this deal, Rob?
I mean, I feel like he's going to get, I feel like he already was overpaid. The Packers couldn't trade him and had to cut him eventually because they overpaid for Jair Alexander. Like, it's a cautionary tale you see all the time in the NFL, overpay for a player and this is the end result. What do I always tell you? The bill comes due, and Jair Alexander is an example of the bill coming due, but he's going to get a nice contract somewhere. He and Jalen Ramsey will both find homes. We'll react to it. We'll act like it's a big deal, but I don't think either of those guys are worth big bucks anymore.
I think the Jair is, if he can stay healthy. He just hasn't been healthy couple of years. Yeah, no, that's a big thing. I also just think that it had just run stale in Green Bay, and it was time for him to go somewhere else. You are right. We are going to get that breaking news sounder, and we're going to talk about it. And I'm assuming that Jair is actually going to sign with the contending team. He's a very talented corner. I mean, he's one of the better free agents that is available at this point. I mean, for the most part, there are certainly some examples. Anybody that's good is on a team now at this point. Or you play like running back or one of those positions where there's just an abundance of those. There aren't a lot of good, talented corners that are available in the middle of the summer. So I think a team like the Rams, like a Ravens, one of those kind of teams, a team that has Super Bowl aspirations, I think that's going to be the team that makes the move, that tries to go get him. We'll see who that is. But Jair Alexander, he is now available. He has been released by the Green Bay Packers. I want to play this audio for you guys. I saw this. It was swirling around on my timeline. I don't think you've actually heard this or not, Rob. There is a radio station. It is 100.9 The Mitt. The Mitt. And they were talking about Patrick Mahomes, and they called him overrated.
Patrick Mahomes, most overrated quarterback in the league. I'm completely out on him. I'm completely out on the Chiefs. Once they made a Hallmark movie, I was like, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like him. I think Josh Allen's a better quarterback. He's 6'5". He can play in cold weather. And I'm just completely out on Patrick Mahomes. I think he's like... like, he's, like, the influencer of, like, NFL. Like, I feel like people just, like, overhype him up, and then that's why they win so many games.
All right, y'all got it. It's not really that hard to do this job. I'm telling you, it's not that hard. It's not. That's the example. If you want to make a career pivot, I can get you on 100.9 The Mitt. I can get you on there. I know a guy that knows a guy. We could get you on there. What is that woman talking about? She called him an influencer. That what she called him? She said he's a football influencer, and she likes Josh Allen because he can play in cold weather. Where the Chiefs play? It's in Kansas City, Missouri, right? It's normally really cold in January. Maybe I missed it. I feel like I've been here during those times. I ain't missed the day. So I don't know what she's talking about. And let me get this right. You don't like the Chiefs because they had a Hallmark movie? Do you know that they're making another Hallmark movie? Guess who the Hallmark movie is going to be about this year? Just take a guess. It's going to be about Buffalo. The same love story that worked in Independence Square, they're about to take that same love story and they're about to give it to Orchard Park, New York. Josh Allen's better. Based on what? Okay. That's what they're talking about on 100.9 The Mitt. Do you want to know where The Mitt is? Let me read that for you.
I actually Googled this because I heard it. I was put in the system and it boggled my mind. It's a Michigan-based radio station. What's going on? Listen, I get it. It's June. Times are tough, you know? Content ain't just falling from the sky. But you don't need to say Patrick Mahomes is overhyped. Like,
The Mitt.
You don't need to do that.
The Mitt.
There's got to be something else to talk about.
Hey, you know what? I'm gonna make a rule to you guys. We're never going to play anybody's radio show if you get preempted for minor league baseball. I can't play your clips on this show anymore. That needs to be a new rule. I went on their website. They can't do their show because of Loons baseball. I'm sorry, maybe that's an elitist feeling. I certainly don't feel that way. But if you go on the radio and you give this opinion, I don't know if we need to play your clips after today.
Patrick Mahomes, most overrated quarterback in the league. I'm completely out on him. I'm completely out on the Chiefs. Once they made a Hallmark movie, I was like, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like him. I think Josh Allen's a better quarterback. He's 6'5". He can play in cold weather, and I'm just completely out on Patrick Mahomes. I think he's like he's like the influencer of like NFL. Like, I feel like people just like overhype him up, And then that's why they win so many games.
So, I hold on. The hype he has leads to the wins?
That's what I was trying to...
So, there was no hype,
yo,
no
what
wins.
What is he talking about? My man's in the back laughing. I'd have been like, hey, it's time to go to commercial. We don't need you here, baby girl. You got to find something else to do. You got to find a new profession. You got to find a new craft. I don't know what's going on. That's everybody's entitled to their opinion. Let me... You know what? Everybody is entitled to their opinion. You are allowed to feel the way that you feel. If you feel Patrick Mahomes is overrated, I mean, I wish she gave me like a stat or she gave me Josh Allen's height. That's what she told me. He's 6'5". That's what she told me. She must love Brock Osweiler. She must be a big fan. He's 6'7". I'm guessing she loves Mike Glennon. He's 6'5". I mean, and he can play in cold weather. He can play in cold weather.
I mean,
have they played any of their playoff games? Has it ever been warm? They're in the AFC. Are there any warm weather good? I mean, they haven't played a game in Miami. They haven't even played a game in a dome for the AFC playoffs. All these games, it's January in America. It's cold. It's cold in Baltimore. It's cold in Buffalo. It's cold in Kansas City. It's cold everywhere.
I'm also confused because she says, once the Hallmark movie was made, I'm out. So were you in before? Were you all Patrick Mahomes and then Hallmark made a movie with...
That's real.
You know...
Then she was like, I'm out.
Now I'm out.
I can't do it. See, that's what she said. She said, I'm out.
What was it? A holiday catch or whatever they call it? Once that hit what the she screen, said. She was out. She saw Alex Gold in Independence Square and thought, no more.
All right, we'll move on. I had to play that for you guys. I'm sorry. I thought you guys would enjoy it. I thought you guys would find it entertaining. I found it entertaining. I think that was a worthwhile use of our time. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk about the Royals weekend, the good and the bad. Jack Caglione makes his Kauffman Stadium debut tomorrow right here on 96.5 The Fan. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.